This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. The city of Rutland may become the newest community in Vermont to welcome refugees as part of the federal refugee resettlement program. Rutland Mayor Christopher Loris has been actively encouraging the federal government to add Rutland to the list of approved U.S. cities for resettlement. And the director of the Vermont Refugee Resettlement Program told Vermont Edition today that the State Department has been looking over an application submitted by the U.S. Committee for Refugees and Immigration. Emila Mirjanovic says she expects a decision any day now. This possibility is one that excites many Rutland residents and worries others. Timothy Cook is a Rutland physician and Army reservist. He's one of the most outspoken critics of the resettlement plan.
There may be some cities you can do this in. Okay, a city that is already very cosmopolitan and used to the kinds of social pressures that come with these kinds of changes. This city already has problems. We're already hanging by a thread. There's no way we could possibly afford this.
Abby Noland is the director of the Rutland Free Library and is for the idea of resettling refugees in Rutland.
To me, it's an exciting thing. I am proud of Rutland for taking this on. I am from the Cleveland area, first of all, which is a city of immigrants. My grandfather walked across Poland to get to the United States. So every new wave brings a new perspective and a new economic burst to this country.
Today on Vermont Edition, we're going to look at the issue of Rutland accepting 100 refugees from Syria, what people on both sides of the issue think it could add to the city and what it might cost. If you'd like to share your perspective, you can call 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or post a note on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. We're already getting a lot of comments from people who have strong feelings about this. Ursula says, "My husband Rolf and I came as immigrants from Germany in the 80s and are business owners of a custom wood window and door shop in the industrial park in West Rutland. Dave O'Brien, then the director of REDC, helped us move our business from a residential area in Pittsford. Thank you, Dave. I'm a member of Rutland Welcomes, and I believe we are a good example of the positive side of diversity. When I first moved here, I was stunned by the number of people who asked me if I was a Nazi. We currently employ 27 Americans in our manufacturing facility, and we can't find enough qualified help. As an employer and immigrant who's become an American, I would welcome Syrian refugees." Jeff says Vermont has an opportunity to show the rest of the United States and the world what hospitality and generosity look like. Let's not waste that opportunity. But John in Swanton says, "Until we solve our problems, we should not be introducing any more. The state is having a major drug and crime problem. Why are we planning to introduce a new group of people into this at this point?" And Robert says, "It would be a real shame if Rutland turned into another Winooski." Winooski, of course, one of the refugee resettlement cities already in Vermont. We're joined today in our Colchester studio by Rutland Mayor Christopher Loris. Chris Loris, welcome to the program.
Thanks.
And in the VPR studios at PEG TV in Rutland, we're also joined by David O'Brien, a member of Rutland First. That's a citizens group that says it wants some questions answered before a decision is made on bringing refugees to Rutland. Dave O'Brien, nice to have you on the program.
Yes, thank you.
Mayor Loris, let's back up first and lay this out for people who maybe haven't been following this issue quite as closely as people in Rutland certainly have. When and why did you think it would be a good move for Rutland to become a refugee resettlement community, specifically for Syrian refugees?
Well, specifically for Syrian refugees, the idea came up last year during the national debate in the early days of the presidential election, when a number of up to 30 governors said no, they were going to close their doors, and our governor here said he would be willing to open his doors. And it was a conversation going back 5 to 7 years we've had locally with some folks about how to grow our declining population. So the stars aligned at the right time to bring in an educated and driven workforce to bring diversity and economic vitality to our community. And the timing was right back in November, December timeframe to start that conversation.
There are several areas of debate that have cropped up since this plan became public. But the charge against you in particular is that you didn't do this in a transparent manner. You didn't involve enough stakeholders. You didn't let community members know this was something that you were having conversations about until the process was too far along. Is that a fair assessment?
No for the first half, yes for the second half. No in that the number of stakeholders numbers were not brought along early. That's simply not factual. You know, I've been accused of making a unilateral decision on this issue, and this issue could not have been pursued without the superintendent of the schools, without the economic development professionals, subject matter experts in the community, and without the housing experts in the community coming along early. So it was not.
But not involved was every member of the Board of Aldermen, right? You did
correct.
Not tell all of the Board of Aldermen.
And that piece is the part of your question that was accurate, is that the Board of Aldermen certainly was not as a board brought on early in the conversations, but the stakeholders, the areas where the capacity was critical for success were absolutely brought on early. And without those decision makers, those stakeholder decision makers, giving it a nod of approval and recognizing the benefits and recognizing that we would be successful, this would not have gotten off the ground.
Did you expect the Board of Aldermen to oppose the idea? Is that why you didn't inform all of them?
No. The reason there wasn't a broad public discussion with the Board of Aldermen was an understanding that ultimately would have led to a vote on the matter. I know the community quite well and knew that would have been the discussion. We just don't get to decide on who our neighbors are. And while we came close to that outcome, I knew that would have definitely have been the outcome if we had broad conversations with public officials early on. And remember, the most important piece was speaking to the stakeholders who have access to the information about those areas of capacity and English language learning, jobs, and housing.
What do you think, listeners, about the idea of Vermont welcoming Syrian refugees into Rutland? How do you feel about this conversation happening in your community? Our number is 1-800-639-2211. You can also post a note on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. David O'Brien, are you against Rutland accepting Syrian refugees?
No. And short answer is no, I'm not. Nor is a whole bunch of folks who have signed a petition, more than 1,200 people in the city, and the folks that I'm working with that are involved in Rutland First. The question of whether or not refugees should come to Rutland is not really the point at this juncture from our perspective. What the point is, and I disagree with how the mayor's characterized his decision process and how he has involved people or not. The fundamental problem here is that he didn't trust his constituents and he didn't trust his closest constituency, the Board of Aldermen that are elected by the voters, to talk about this in an open way. Most of the people that I've talked to and a lot of the people that signed our petition, and I want to be very precise about the language in our petition, it says not at this time. It doesn't say, no, we don't want people coming here. No, we're not going to vote about who can live in our neighborhoods or in our city. But we want to know more and we want to have more conversation about this before we go forward, because it's a major commitment over numbers of years. The number 100 has been used a lot, but that's not really what this is. It's a multi-year program, but I can get into more detail about that.
Basically, the refugee resettlement program, once there is an approved community, resettles refugees there on a regular basis. It certainly happened in Burlington and Winooski. Dave O'Brien, what questions specifically have you not had answered that you still need to get answers on before you would feel comfortable taking a position?
Yeah, so I would answer that this way. First of all, it's not about questions that I have. It's the questions about what we, a whole collection of people, have. And I don't think those questions are for me to lay out here in this program, but for the community to have that opportunity to have that conversation, to ask those questions.
But I want to know what those questions are, because as a member of Rutland First and as somebody who you know, is part of this organization that wants questions answered, what questions?
Well, no, wait a minute now. I'm going to have to push back here, because I think the process is being completely glossed over here by the mayor and by the conversation so far. How significant this is that for 6 months the mayor worked in private, did not consult people, did not trust people to have a conversation about this, and didn't come forth even to this day an application has been filed with the Department of State that lays out how Rutland would accommodate this over a number of years. We haven't seen it. The Board of Aldermen have not seen it. The letter that the Board of Aldermen just sent last week brings this particularly to light and their frustration that they know as little information as we do about where the city is going and what commitments the mayor has made. So I don't think this is about specific questions. We could have a whole conversation about that. But I think the lack of process here – and I'll give you one more thing that's very important for people to be aware of. We did a public records request of the mayor's communications leading up to this. And we have an email from the person that you just mentioned from the Vermont Resettlement Program advising the mayor not to talk to anybody and to keep it quiet. How are we supposed to trust a program, an organization coming in and working in our town over multiple years that says, let's keep this quiet and don't share it with your constituents?
Well, let's talk about process for a minute here because, you know, clearly that is certainly an issue. And Dave O'Brien, I take your point that it is an issue, but I also want to get to the questions about what more needs to be known because, you know, we just heard that the State Department is going to make a decision at some point this month. Any day now is what we're expecting. So in some ways, you know, we need to talk about what happens next and that. But let me read you a couple of the comments that we've gotten from people who are concerned about the process. Alpha 16 says, I think the biggest complaint by most of the folks opposed to this decision is that the mayor made the decision without any conversation with the citizens. No explanations, no attempt to answer any of the questions that have been raised. There are some serious issues that have folks concerned: health issues, logistical issues, housing, education, funding, language. These are issues that must be settled before 100 strangers appear on our doorstep, not after they're already here. Sally says, why was Loris's plan to import 100 Syrian refugees in secret? Why won't he let us vote on this issue? And how can a vote be non-binding? We can now only assume that we are living under a dictatorship under Loris. And Don says, why did you bypass your own board and encourage Mr. Nadi to also bypass his own board? Did you not consider this would be seen as disrespectful at best, devious at worst?
Okay, I can answer each of those individually. First, I'm going to absolutely positively defend Emilia Mirzanovic from the VRRP that as
she's
that,
the director of the Vermont
she's
Refugee
the director
Resettlement
of Vermont
Program.
Refugee Resettlement Program and saying that she was trying to keep this secret in that email is a gross mischaracterization. That was simply about when in the process that was being laid out we would have a broad public engagement question and answer session.
She did say in Reporting by 7 Days that this, if once you open it up, there are going to be people who are opposed to it, and it's better to keep it secret while it's in the process of having those discussions.
That's correct. But the email was talking about when, after we had the public announcement, I recommended that we jump right in with broad public engagement and meetings. And VRP said, no, let's do other things with stakeholders first, with the health community, the business community, and have small group sessions with those stakeholders before reaching out to the broader public. And
because you were concerned that the broader public would not like the plan?
No, I said go earlier with questions. And her recommendation was meet with stakeholders immediately thereafter and then go with questions. So it was a question of whether or not we met with the public first before the stakeholders after the announcement or met with the public after meeting with those stakeholders. But saying asking to keep it secret, as I said, is a gross mischaracterization.
But didn't you, by doing it this way, first of all, people are going to get stuck on this question of process and transparency and feeling left out. Second of all, it gives convenient cover to other people who might have other reasons for not wanting refugees in the community and can now point to this as, well, this is the reason why.
And I think you're seeing that from Mr. O'Brien today, and we continue to see that from people. It's been – tomorrow will be 11 weeks since the announcement, and questions as defined by your first questioner you wrote there, I can't remember, it wasn't a name, it was a –
Alpha 16.
You know, those questions have all been addressed and answered.
Questions
and,
about health care, housing,
yes.
Finances.
Health care, housing, finances. Those questions have all been answered, and those questions are accessible through the Rutland City website and actually through a lot of media sources that ask those very same questions. But I can't control whether or not individuals want to avail themselves of the answers to those questions. And I'm prepared to answer all of those today and right now that anyone would want to answer, because I've been answering them for 11 weeks.
Dave O'Brien.
So I'm completely confused. So I'm trying to understand how something works in this sequence, that why are we answering questions after a decision's already made? How fair is that, Mayor Loris, to make a – no, let me finish my point, please. How fair is that to make a decision about moving forward with a multi-year program and then start answering questions? And I'll add to that also that I don't believe it's fair to say that all these questions have been, quote, asked and answered. And I'll give you a perfect example. Where is the abstract, the application that was filed with the federal government? Where is that for us all to see?
The abstract was, in fact, given to the Board of Aldermen, and they do absolutely have the latitude to provide that abstract to any constituency.
Dave O'Brien, you satisfied?
No. I would love to see this abstract. I would ask the fundamental question: why? What is the rush? I guess is the way I would put it. Why wouldn't we want to have the community have an opportunity to go through the discovery process that you've been through, Chris, on your own in a very, I'm sure, very deliberate, very thorough way? You've gotten to a conclusion and thought this is the right thing to do. You should be affording people, especially people that have other things in their lives, their daily job, their families, the opportunity to go through that discovery, that journey themselves, and reach a point where they're entirely in a different place and they're with you 100%. Instead, what we have is a community that's divided and people that have been longtime friends not getting along, saying things that are very unfortunate in lots of different directions. And how is that going to be the right community environment to welcome these people from somewhere else, awful places that they're trying to escape?
Dave O'Brien, let me ask you before we get the mayor's response. That question of the community voting on who gets to decide to move into the community or not, why is that something that the community should be deciding, that community members should be voting on?
Well, I would draw this distinction. I disagree with the mayor's assumption that there would be this up-down vote about people coming here. I don't know if an up-down vote about people coming here would even be enforceable under the federal law. I'm suggesting that the community would have enough time to deliberate about something that is going to be something we're all going to be a part of and get to a place where they're comfortable and understand what is going to take place. So and specific, the vote that we asked for was not a vote to say yes or no, come here, but please hit the pause button so that we can all get up to speed and understand where this is going and what this is going to mean. Right now what it looks like is a plane that's being designed in flight. No other thing that you do in life, in your personal family affairs, business, government, would usually operate that way.
Mayor Loris.
And so to answer that question and to address those concerns, the forums that we have had, the question and the answer forums, where there has been information available and there has been individuals on site to answer those questions, generally have devolved into opinion forums rather than question and answer forums. There have been time and time again, both with the Board of Aldermen, with me, where there have been opportunities for people to get their questions answered, where we've tried to put that information out, and either people haven't listened, haven't liked the answers, or frankly, only wanted to discuss the process and didn't want to get their questions answered about those capacity issues that any community needs to be a successful host community for refugee resettlement. And the fact is that the city of Rutland enjoys the areas of capacity that are required for refugee resettlement. We have safe and secure housing. We have housing stock still available for the 19,000 people that lived in Rutland in 1970. We now have 16,500. and we still have the housing stock for 19,000. So we have available, safe, and secure housing. We have the jobs capacity where, you know, you heard one of your questioners and commenters say that they have a business and they need employees. And we've got that message loud and clear from business after business after business. And that's why both the Rutland Chamber of Commerce and the Rutland Economic Development Corporation, David's former agency, signed letters of support, and it's part of the application package. Likewise, English language learning is the third area of critical capacity, and the school superintendent, Mary Moran, who is a rock star in the Rutland area and in the state in the education world, she was brought into this extremely early as a stakeholder. And if she and her team had said they didn't have the capacity, it would have been dead in the water. So the questions are available. The answers to questions are available. People just need to ask the questions. And I think you're finding, Jane, that individuals don't want to ask specific questions. They want to just focus on process, process, process. And we've got all the answers in the world to demonstrate that Rutland is a compassionate community, a welcoming community that will experience significant cultural and economic benefits from refugee resettlement. And this is supported right up through the state to the Vermont Chamber of Commerce and the Vermont Futures Program that reflects that within the entire state of Vermont, we will experience an anemic 2% economic growth rate unless in the state we grow our population by 12 to 13%. Rutland is a microcosm of the state. We need people. We don't have a jobs problem. We have a population problem.
We're going to keep talking about this. Have to take a quick break. This is Vermont Edition. We're talking about the issue of Rutland becoming a refugee resettlement community, maybe accepting 100 Syrian refugees into the community. And we're hearing from people who have some pretty strong views on the subject. You can add yours or ask a question by calling 1-800-639-2211 or post a comment on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Today, we're taking a look at the issue of Rutland becoming a city approved for refugee resettlement and the mayor's desire to see 100 Syrian refugees relocated in his city. His support for this plan has made some residents and officials in the city very angry, especially about the process he took. We're learning more, and we're hearing from people who live in the community about what they think should happen. You can add your thoughts on the Vermont Edition Facebook page or call 1-800-639-2211. Our guests are Rutland Mayor Christopher Loris and David O'Brien, a member of Rutland First, which is a citizens group that says it wants questions answered before a decision is made on bringing refugees to Rutland. Pat in Rutland says Rutland's been amazingly welcoming. Despite the Board of Aldermen allowing for community comments pro and con, the overwhelming opinion has been positive, and Rutland welcomes signs have begun popping up everywhere. Unfortunately, there is some misinformation out there, and even our press sometimes misstates information in headlines. But the decision to open our doors to these suffering refugees is a great one and will bring fresh air to the community. Michael in St. Johnsbury says, so there are no American citizens that need the resources that will be spent on these people. We need to take care of our own people first, or Syria may not be the only country torn apart by civil war. And we got a note from Michael who says, is resettlement of refugees a zero-sum game? Will the resources to support refugees, in fact, mean there will be fewer resources for Rutland residents? Will current Rutland residents end up being poorer as a result of the resettlement program, with fewer resources for our own children in our schools, reduced social services for our current residents, and higher taxes to support local services to help refugees? Will Rutland be a stronger and richer community as a result of refugee resettlement rather than a weaker and poorer one?
And
Dave O'Brien, I want to go to you first on this, actually, because, you know, these are questions that Michael is asking about this program and about the issue in Rutland. What's your take on it?
Well, I just would say that those questions are evidence that there's quite a few people in the community that are not convinced or don't know enough to be comfortable that this is going to work out well for us. And I also want to make this point, too, that it'll work out well for the very people we're trying to help, because no one wins if this doesn't succeed. We want the refugees to be happy, healthy, and successful, and we want our community as a whole to be successful. Starting from this kind of an environment we have now is not going to be helpful. As far as some of the specific questions that were mentioned, Sure. Those are things that's naturally come up. I think if you look at the letter that Rutland first filed with the Department of State, you know, a bunch of things are raised that we have to ask the question, what is the capacity of the community to support the number of people, the hundreds of people that will come here over the next number of years? We're not sure how many. Because this is a city and a community, and by all the numbers that I can see published, has some real strong challenges from an economic perspective. Very high percentage of household income is coming from public support instead of wages. Those numbers are much worse than the rest of Vermont and the rest of the country. We have a high percentage of our population in poverty, higher than the rest of the state, higher than nationally. We have a very soft real estate market. Anyone in the real estate business would tell you that. There's a lot of things that point to a community that's got some challenges from an economic perspective. And so you have to ask the question. I think that's certainly what a lot of people say to me. How is that going to work out when we're going to add to that picture that already exists?
And have you asked that question?
I know it's been asked in various forms. I haven't seen – to go back to the example of the abstract or the application – that is the sort of analysis that we would certainly expect to see.
But so, okay, so leaving aside, because I know that this question of process is a big one, and the question of the application that you haven't seen, but the questions about where financial resources come from, is that still a question, or is that one that you feel like has been settled?
No, I wouldn't say that's been settled. But, you know, I have to come back to the bigger picture here for a moment. I don't think the problem here is specific questions and who has what questions. I fail to understand why this has to be on the timeline that it's on. I mean, I've
been
in local –
But the question I have for you about that, David, because I do get it. But let me just ask you this, because one of the questions that I have is this is already in front of the State Department. So if this moves forward and, as you said, a vote by the public might not make any difference, that it seems to me that – in some ways, that ship has sailed. And the question now for voters is, are you going to re-vote in Mayor Loris or kick him out for what he for the process that he took? But the question of what does the community need to understand depending on, you know, when the State Department makes this decision?
So how should anyone in the community feel that they're told that this decision's already been made by your mayor in secret with a very close group of people? And now all you have to do is figure out a way to get comfortable with it and get some questions answered that we'll have a couple of forums and we'll answer your questions. But this is a foregone conclusion. So you're really just going to have to decide how you're going to get to a place of comfort with it.
Yeah, not good.
How is someone in the community supposed to feel about that?
Probably not good, but then you vote him out, right?
Well, yeah, but the die is cast, is it not?
Yeah, is it not? Mayor Loris, is the die not cast here?
I was hoping to answer Mike's question on that email.
To that question, well, you have a community who at least some members say, we're not comfortable with the way this has happened. We can kick you out next year, but that may be too late. So, things will have already happened. You okay with that?
With getting kicked out of office for doing the right thing? I'm absolutely okay with getting kicked out of office for doing the right thing. And if I get the opportunity to answer Mike's question, I'll be able to demonstrate in many ways how this is the right thing to do.
But does it matter whether your community is on board with you or not?
Yes, absolutely. And frankly, the level of support in the community for refugee resettlement dwarfs the level of opposition. You know, you keep quoting Rutland First, and there's a group called Rutland Welcomes, which is over 1,000 strong of people actually signed up to help with refugee resettlement. And Stacy Blake, the communications or director for USCRI, U.S. Committee on Refugees and Immigrants, has stated publicly that in their world, they have never seen an outpouring of support, and it's unprecedented the amount of support Rutland, Vermont is willing to provide in time, energy, and resources to make this a success. And frankly, the folks from Winooski, when they heard, they came down to Rutland for a presentation and they heard what we were doing, they were like, holy crud, we'd love to have that level of support in Winooski for refugee resettlement. So the point is that the level of support in Rutland dwarfs, absolutely dwarfs the level of opposition. And is it going to be a zero-sum game? No, absolutely not. It's going to be an absolute benefit for the city of Rutland economically, culturally, and there is empirical evidence to support that. There are hard studies out of Cleveland, out of Akron, that demonstrate that there's a 10-to-1 return on investment for any federal or state tax dollars that go towards refugee resettlement. And in the city of Rutland, I write the budget. There will not be any municipal tax money going towards this issue. And on the school side, likewise, we have the capacity within the current budget right now. And if we need to expand that capacity, there is federal money that refugee resettlement programs, or rather that schools can access in communities that have refugee resettlement, called school impact grants, that will mitigate any potential increase to that. But is it a zero-sum game? No, it's not. And Rutland, just like the communities before it, will demonstrate or will recognize significant cultural and economic benefits. There is not a vibrant, growing, and successful community in the country right now that's not embracing new Americans, either immigrants or refugees. And that is a fact.
We reached out to the city manager in Winooski, which is another resettlement community in Vermont, about what city resources have been put towards the refugee community. And Catherine DeCaro, known as Deke, wrote and told us, we have a small cost of formal translation, about $6,000 to $10,000 in police and another $4,000 to $6,000 in the rest of the city. It usually is dependent on the number of mailers and other outreach we wish to do. This is on a slightly over $6 million budget. Formal translation here, a person who can translate the meaning rather than just the words. And Deke writes, this has proven to be very important in creating understanding. She says, to compare, we are projecting to spend $51,000 on senior programs and $130,000 on recreation. And she says, we do not consider that people are still refugees when they arrive. They're residents. We don't break out the cost or the revenue specific to a group by status, race, gender, age, sexual orientation, or any other category. Dave O'Brien, you want to weigh in here on the question of whether or not this will be a positive thing for Rutland before we end this conversation?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a hard question to answer. There's a lot of data you have to look at to determine that. I'd be curious to see some of the examples that the mayor gave. And I also think that we have to be careful about drawing distinctions between, you know, the municipal budget and, you know, federal monies. At the end of the day, those are still taxpayer monies. Those are still public funds that we all pay for. So, you know, to make those distinctions doesn't matter. You know, so if we put more kids through the school system or require more support in the school system, that still is ultimately part of public funds. But I want to go back to something that the mayor alluded to about how he's characterizing Rutland First or the folks that more than 1,200 people that signed a petition, that's dwarfed by the support that's within Rutland Welcomes. And I think this is an important distinction, which is Rutland Welcomes, which is a lot of wonderful people, many people I know, is got a lot of people that are involved that are not Rutland City residents. The 1,200 people that signed a petition are all Rutland City residents.
Mayor Loris is shaking his head vehemently here.
Yeah,
we're running out of time.
But I've looked at the petition, and almost half of those names are from outside of the city of Rutland. So that's a
on
gross
the Rutland First.
On the petition, that's a gross mischaracterization. Again, another false narrative that it's signed by 1,200 city residents. That's not true.
Well, I think one thing we can say is that there is conflict and there are questions that remain. And whether people are inside or outside of Rutland, this is certainly something that people are paying attention to. Ongoing conversation when we're going to have to stop for now, but certainly continue on VPR as this moves forward. Christopher Loris is the mayor of Rutland. Thanks for being with us today. I appreciate your time. Dave O'Brien is a member of Rutland First. Again, that is a citizens group that says it wants questions answered before a decision is made on bringing refugees to Rutland. Dave, thanks to you for being on the program as well. You're listening to Vermont Edition. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. In addition to the many athletes preparing for a big trip to Rio for the 2016 Summer Olympics, there's a small army of other kinds of people who will also be making the trek: coaches, trainers, healthcare workers, journalists. Among the Vermonters going is sports broadcaster Peter Graves of Thetford. He'll be doing live PA announcing at some of the Rio events, and he joins us now to talk about what that's like. Peter, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Thank you very much, Jane. It's great to be with you.
So do you know yet what events, what kinds of things you'll be doing this broadcasting, live PA announcing for in Rio?
You know, it's interesting. As of right now, I don't. I got a call last Friday, and one of the things I know that I'm doing for sure is I'm going to go down a week early and meet with all the PA announcers at all the different venues over a period of a week and clinic them and bring them up to speed on some of the knowledge that I've acquired over the years of do's and don'ts. And, you know, it's interesting because in my career, often I've been, you know, picked to go to one venue and do a lot of research about that, you know, ski sport particularly. I've done a great deal of. But right now it looks like I'm going to be a backup announcer if anyone gets sick, loses their voice, which is a very common problem. And at Sochi, I started doing the English language announcing at Metals Plaza and ended up doing ski jumping and alpine skiing, which was great. So as of today, I really don't know, but I know I'm going.
Yeah, this will be, I think, your 9th Olympic Games as either a TV commentator or a PA announcer. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah.
So you're sort of like
it's
a coach
been an
now.
Amazing experience. I'm sorry?
You're sort of like a coach now if you're leading clinics for other PA announcers.
Yeah, I'm really proud to do that. I've learned a lot over this time, some of it by making mistakes myself that I try to eliminate with others. So,
Peter, that is an opening
journey.
You never should ask a journalist. What is the biggest mistake that you made as a PA announcer?
Well, I'll give you one example that I made in Sochi, for example, and this will be one thing that I'll be talking to the athletes about. Often very common among people to say Macedonia, for example, but the formal IOC nomenclature is the former Yugoslav Republic of Macedonia, for example, and that's just one of many. So, you know, I'll be talking to the announcers about not cheerleading for their favorite country, to pronunciate the athletes' names properly, all those kinds of things. No cheerleading, and perhaps most importantly, in PA announcing, not letting the announcer be an integral part of the show. They should be there to educate and inspire and inform, but not to cheerlead.
So what kind of research do you do before you're going then? I mean, we don't even know all of the athletes. Just yesterday, we were doing trials in this country for gymnastics athletes to make the team. So you can't necessarily research their names yet, but do you research cultural things? Are you learning Portuguese?
No, not learning Portuguese, but in the case where that is the native tongue, the IOC requires the mother tongue of the country, then they require public address announcers in both English and French. So down there in many cases will be, and I worked in that environment in Greece during the summer games in Athens, where there will be three languages coming out over the loudspeaker. But right now I'm accumulating as much data and as much research in a wide variety of sports. Cycling is one that I follow closely, track and field, the marathon, for example. Some of those events it would be pretty easy for me to get plugged into.
When you're doing PA announcing in a live venue, what are the challenges that might be different than TV broadcasting, where the viewers at home have the best camera angles and can see all of the action? Because as those of us who like going to live sporting events know, it's a fantastic atmosphere, but you're not always seeing all of the action.
Yeah, and that's a wonderful question. I would respond by saying, you know, the rights holders around the world, which NBC, of course, is the U.S. rights holder, I mean, they're able to critique and explain great moves as well as ones that maybe aren't so good. Our job is really to present the information unadorned. Consider that we're talking to a really multinational crowd out there, fans from all over the world. And it would be a great mistake to go down as a representative of any country and really cheer your nation on. So I think neutrality is the biggest thing. And then I think we tend to do a lot less analysis of the program than the TV broadcasters or radio broadcasters do.
What are you most excited for, just between you and me?
I love the Olympics, and you know, it began for me with ABC Sports in Lake Placid in 1980. It's been an amazing journey. With all the attendant problems of the games, and there are many. I believe in the Olympic movement as a force for peace and brotherhood and goodwill in the world. I think it's vitally important, and to be able to play just a small role in anything like that is incredibly powerful to me and very humbling. And I'd like to tell the announcers, and this is not the first time that I've schooled announcers before. I did it in Salt Lake and Sochi and other places as well. But I think I really like people that have a tear in their eye when they're watching the opening and closing ceremonies, when they watch an inspired performance. Those are the kind of announcers that I look for. And my boss down there is somebody I've worked with at many Olympic Games. There is quite an interesting sort of traveling group of people that take their knowledge and their bag and go around the world. I mean, Sochi was an incredible experience, not only culturally, but to really get to work with and make friends with a lot of the Russian people who are volunteers over there. So, all of that really engages me very much.
Well, Peter Graves, I hope you have a great time in Rio. Thank you so much for talking with us today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Peter Graves of Thetford is a sports broadcaster. He'll be announcing live sporting events at the 2016 Summer Olympics in Rio. Today, we return to summer school to learn another helpful skill. Pet owners will find today's instruction particularly helpful as we learn how to wash a dog with the Rutland County Humane Society in Pittsford.
I'm Cheyenne Crossman. I'm Director of Animal Care at the Rutland County Humane Society. And it's going to be Lily, a nice little dog, owner Surrender. She's a pit bull mix. You'd like to have some cotton balls ready for the ears. You don't want to get water in the ears. Could develop a secondary ear infection with water in there. Some shampoo, your leash to restrain your dog, keep him close to you. A towel for drying. You want a washcloth also to wash the face, the facial folds in the face. You don't want to run water right over the top of their head into their eyes. Keep their eyes clean and dry. And you start from the top of the head and the neck and work back. And then I'm going to pour a line of shampoo right from the top of her neck right down her back. And then I'm going to lather her all up.
Now we just rub it all in. Rub it all in, huh, Lily? Rub it all in, huh, Lily? Scrubby, scrubby.
Make sure I lather in her armpits, her belly, down between her legs. And I'm also going to shampoo and lather in between her toes and her feet. Make sure I get her toes and her feet nice and soapy and scrubbed up. Then I want to make sure I rinse her. I always want to make sure you rinse her completely. Any shampoo that is left on there will irritate her skin. You'll want to take your hand and just kind of squeegee the water back away from her and rinse the same direction. So you're going in a motion to wash the water off. Same way down the legs. Rinse the water down the legs. With the hose, you want to make sure you rinse the undercarriage in her armpits, in between her legs, under the tail. If the dog has a tail, make sure it's rinsed well. Footing for the dog is another important issue. If you are bathing the dog in a sink with slippery footing, I suggest possibly using a towel. Put a towel down in your sink so the dog doesn't feel like it's going to slip around. Once you have totally finished the body, you will want to wet your washcloth and wipe her face down. Wipe around her eyes, wipe out all the facial folds, start from the top of her face and wipe down the sides. Wipe away from her eyes, not towards her eyes. Wipe out her ears. Once you're finished, you may clean her ears. They will shake while you're giving the dog a bath. You will get wet, so prepare yourself for that. But once you're finished, you'll take a towel and just rub her. Try to dry her as best you can. There we go. Yay! Nearly had a bath!
That was a very patient Lily the dog and Cheyenne Crossman, director of animal care at the Rutland County Humane Society. VPR's Rick Sengary produced that piece. That's it for today. Tomorrow, a surprising milestone. Fewer Vermont babies were born in 2015 than in any other year since the 19th century. We'll talk about how Vermonters choose if and when to have kids, and we'd love it if you were willing to share your thoughts and experience. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening.